You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. What we want. You're listening to On the Couch, On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are On the Couch. Welcome, everybody. As always, a terrific show today where you're going to get lots of help with managing your stress. Come on, guys, calm down. Chill out. Not really easy to do, is it? I know. Everybody says, keep it cool. I'm chilling. Well, I'm going to take care of this. I'm going to relax. I'm going to use my tools. And then, whoop, we're right back into it every day. We're back into the drama. We listen to the media, all the news and the bad. Well, it's about bad news. It's got to be because it's entertaining. Of course, keeps us going. And most of us are anxious about something in our lives, whether it's finances or relationships, job problems, whatever. You know, we all get stressed out. And, you know, most of my patients come to see me, actually, to get help for their stress. That's it. They want to change certain bad behaviors because they're reacting to life situations or family problems or relationship stuff that they want to change. Or they want to change other people, which they can't do, of course. I'm going to change somebody else so I'll feel better. No, you got to change yourself. But the underlying problem is that they are usually anxious with some fears. And there's always depression. It goes hand in hand. Why can't I control my anxiety? Why can't I control the world or control other people or control out there? Well, if the statistics are accurate, about 20 to 30% of the population suffers from some form of anxiety at some point in their lives. And so, according to my special guest, who I'm going to bring up in just a moment, that's about 20 million people walking around feeling pretty bad. So today we're going to talk about how to get you calmer and less stressed and really help you work through those old negative experiences and thoughts and daily issues that are keeping you on edge and keeping you from living the life you deserve. Because we all deserve happiness, more fulfilling lives. That's it. And my special guest today, you'll recognize her. She's a regular, one of my favorite self-help authors, and she does everything else out there in the world, Beverly Flassington. Beverly is a corporate consultant and trainer, an executive coach, a hypnotherapist, a hypnotherapy trainer, a college professor, motivational speaker. Let me take a breath, just to name a few. And I'm sure you have seen Bev's work on television, heard her on radio, and hundreds of media outlets, including the Wall Street Journal, MSNBC, Reader's Digest, USA Today, many others. And today we're going to be talking about her latest book, which is great. It is a helpful book, and you guys have to check it out. To get your lives less stressed, period, end of report. It's called Self-Talk for a Calmer You. Beverly, welcome to the show. Nice to have you back.
I'm so happy to be here, Dr. Michelle.
Well, we always have a great time together, and I get such positive feedback from my listeners about you whenever you're on the show, because your books are, boy, you lay it out there and help people with so many different aspects of their lives. And you know,
oh, that means a lot to me, because that's the whole goal.
Well, you're doing it. You're doing it. And so today we're talking about your latest book, and it's a good one. I love the instructions. It's not a, you know, hefty, oh, I'm going to have to work book, folks. It's a, here's how you can think differently. Here's some thoughts to write down. Why don't you practice this? Why don't you work on yourself? And we'll be talking about how you can help yourself a little bit more in the show. But, you know, you really provide a lot of great studies and information that are fascinating. And real-life stories about people who you've worked with. And so can you share with listeners some of those things out there that you learned and observed that really inspired you to write this book to help everybody keep calmer and manage their self-talk and their stress?
Yes, this is one of those talk about passion from the heart kinds of books. The publisher actually called me and had the idea for this, and I felt like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get a chance to take, you know, so many things that I observe, and I just find myself doing, even with corporate clients of mine, certainly in hypnotherapy we teach this, but I would just find that people were so held back by the things that they said to themselves, and that oftentimes their anxiety was so bad that they weren't able to kind of take that deep breath, step back for a minute, think about what you can do. They were just really so caught up in the negative aspects of it. So I had the opportunity to just take all of this learning from people and jobs and people I knew, job hunting and the relationship work I do and the hypnotherapy work, and put it all in one place.
What a great idea. It's a long time coming, and you've never really written a book like this. You've done books about, you know, just, positive thinking and which way to go, make a shift in your life, relationship help, so many, 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 many books, which we'll talk about, too, at the end of the show. But this is what we all need right now, Beverly, and what a great idea that your publisher said, Bev, write this book. You know.
Well, I'll tell you, I got an email today from a gentleman that I've known for a very, very long time, a colleague of mine, and he wrote me this note, and this is it brought tears to my eyes, Dr. Aww. Michelle, that's the truth, because he wrote and he said, you know, I got a copy of your book in the mail today, and I've only gone through the first chapter. Mm. He said, you probably see me as somebody who's in charge, in control, my work persona is, you know, I've got it all together. He said, I suffer from so much anxiety, and I'm reading this book and feeling like somebody is finally talking to me about what I haven't been able to talk about.
God, isn't, and that's what it's all about, is helping folks out there who really, you know, appear as well to be high functioning, you know, we're in charge, we're doing well, but so many people suffer, which leads me to the next question. What are some of those most common types of anxiety? I mean, we hear about it. I see it in my practice all the time. But can you share with listeners, you know, so maybe they can identify, oh, yeah, I have that, some of the types of anxiety?
Yeah, so of course, you know, some people have just general phobias, right? Yeah. They can't necessarily pin it on just this feeling all the time something's wrong that they're. But in terms of, you know, classic anxiety disorders, there's everything from social anxiety, people feeling uncomfortable. I don't want to go to a party. I don't want to be at the supermarket, anywhere that I'm having to go out and interact with others. Certainly post-traumatic stress disorder, which I think is really only now, Dr. Michelle, becoming more understood. I think we've always associated this with military personnel. Mm-hmm. People have been through war. But anybody, my goodness, you look at, you know, people that have experienced some of these mass shootings or here in Boston, the Boston Marathon, the bombing we had this year. I mean, post-traumatic stress is quite serious for anyone that has experienced some, you know, significantly traumatic event. Obsessive compulsive disorder, that is, you know, for somebody who feels the need to go back, check the door 10 times, did I lock it, did I turn the stove off? You know, there's panic disorders. I had a client I was working with not that long ago, and we were just talking generally, and she was telling me about a situation where she had got stuck on a bridge, a really high bridge, and she said, I didn't know what was wrong with me. You know, all of a sudden, my heart was palpitating, I felt sweaty, and I'm thinking, I'm dying.
Yeah.
Classic panic disorder, right?
Right.
So
right.
These are all, and then there's just kind of generalized anxiety disorder. I mean, there's people who just feel anxious. Like, I like to say that everything's going well, and then they're thinking, well, the other shoe's going to have to drop.
Exactly. The what ifs. What if? What if? What if? What if? And like, you know, I said earlier, the media sure doesn't help. I'm not putting down the media. Come on now. But it's just, you can't help it. You just, you go online, you read all the different news outlets, television, radio, internet. It's all sort of feeding into that, oh my God, what if syndrome. Yeah, I wake up the morning, the first thing I see is President Obama's worried about Syria. It's like, oh, hello. Yeah, of course we can't put our head in the sand like ostriches, but it feeds into our fears, doesn't it?
Well, I think it does, and I especially think, I appreciate you kind of touching on that, because I think what often happens with people is those things that we absolutely positively have no control over. And I think that's, you know, we expose ourselves to all of these things that I can't do anything about it. You know, I'm at the mercy. And people get that, you know, that sense of anxiety because I just can't, you know, the economy is bad and the world is falling apart. And it just builds and builds and builds until people get to the point where they really have, they're paralyzed. You know, they're just really unable to say, I'm going to take a step forward and do something for myself. So I do think it's a really chronic problem. The numbers, I think, aren't even reported at the level of what, and you could certainly say this from, you know, the work that you do. I mean, I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but I certainly deal with a lot of people in my day-to-day, and there's just a lot of really anxious people out there.
Yeah, there sure are. By the way, in case you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, my special guest today, one of my favorites, Beverly Flaxington. We're talking about her latest book. It's called Self-Talk for a Calmer You, and we're going to tell you how you can get a hold of this book at the end of the show and just give you a little bit more information to give you insight what she says about you and why you're so anxious and how to manage it as well. So don't go anywhere, everybody. If you'd like to call in, you can do so. I may hold some of your calls until we really get into the meat of the situation. So it's not I want, but I'd love to hear from you guys. 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. Also, you can email me. If you're shy, you don't want to get on the air, I do have a direct email address where I do answer questions from listeners here on LA Talk. It's Doc, D-O-C, Michelle with two L's. DocMichelle@AOL.com. All right, guys. So, you know, you talk about that we have to recognize whether the stress we're feeling is empowering or enfeebling us. I mean, how can we be, what do you mean by that, Bev?
So, you know, you think about this. Let's take an example of somebody who maybe they have a job and they haven't had a lot of opportunity to get recognized. All of a sudden the boss comes in and says, you know, we're going to assign you to this really important project, and it's very, very high profile, and all the leaders of the company are going to know about this. And, you know, that could be a very stressful situation for somebody. They could start to feel that level of anxiety. There's performance anxiety. Am I going to be able to do it? Is my job at risk? Right? So even as I'm talking it through, we can feel that there could be stress that builds. Mm-hmm. Well, it can be empowering to be able to say, you know what? I'm going to turn this into energy. I really want to look at this and be able to show what I can do. You know, this, I'm being given an opportunity here.
Yeah.
You know, let me take that stress and let me channel it into something that's really positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The enfeebling side of it, right, is where somebody says, oh my gosh, I don't believe it. More work? This is too much for me. I already have so many things that I have to, I'm never going to be able to do this. This, I'm not going to be able to have my weekends anymore. This is just going to consume me. And you can just picture, right, this person's leaving at the end of the day and they're slumped over and they go home and the spouse says, what's wrong? I got another thing put on my plate. So So this is where, you know, the stress itself really isn't the issue, because let's face it, stress is pretty normal,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
I mean, there really is no way to eliminate stress.
Right.
Stress is an indicator that something's going on.
Right.
The question is, what do we do with it?
Wow.
Do we let it empower us, or do we let it destroy
yeah,
us?
Yeah, exactly. And you talk about, you know, what's really important is to try to locate the source of our anxiety. And as I mentioned, Bev, I love the fact that you do have really helpful, very easy to understand. It's almost like worksheets, things to think about, things to write down, things to explore within yourself in your book to help readers. So how can we begin to sort of locate the source of our anxiety? You know what I'm saying?
Yes, and so first of all, I just want to touch on, I do feel it's so important for people. Everyone's situation is their own, and I've just read way too many books myself over my life where, you know, somebody's saying some really important things, but I'm having a hard time connecting it to what I'm living with day to day. So it's really important, you know, for each of your listeners, we can talk about this, but they really do have to connect to where does this matter to me, right? What's really going on in my life? So how do you do that? Well, there's a couple of things that you can think about. First of all, you know, there's something that triggers us. Like you gave this wonderful example of getting up in the morning, I turn on the radio, I'm listening to the president talking about something, and now I can see I'm starting to get anxious, right?
Yeah.
I'm starting. Well, so first of all, we often, if we are observant, right, and we're paying attention like you were, we will start to see that there's certain things that trigger us, like this person telling me about the bridge.
Yes.
There I am. She's saying, I didn't even know I had a phobia about bridges.
Right. What?
Like, there I am. I'm so anxious.
Yes.
So some of this really is, instead of just running away with it, like you could have, instead of being observant, and instead of recognizing, you could start getting on the phone with everyone you know. Can you believe the world's falling apart and what's going to happen?
Right.
And, you know, we need to start building bomb shelters and not know the impact. But instead, you could literally stand there and say, wow, look at this. Like, this is something that if I let it feed into me, I could really get anxious about this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that being observant, being kind of objective about what's going on. I'm triggered. What's the source of that?
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people, Dr. Michelle, it connects back to something that happened to us as a child, messages that we were given, you know, some of that. So we need to be able to see that. What does it remind you of?
Yes.
What is this resonating with you?
Yes.
Is there something unsafe in your environment? Were your parents always afraid about something? What does it... So that, you know, I talk a lot about being a detective, right?
Yes.
Having that curiosity.
Right.
And that's really what you need to have here. Instead of getting pulled in, start really examining it a little bit.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, because you can just sort of see, now what are some of these things? What comes up for me? And kind of figure out, and you have a great part of your book too, where you talk about how can we understand what part of our past, you know, is like causing anxiety in the present. You know, what part of that, what is that? And you just mentioned that, you know, you said whatever messages we're getting from the past and, you know, negativity, or if our parents were fearful, or, you know, whoever our caregivers were, what messages are we given? You can't trust people, or you're not worthy of anything, and therefore you don't deserve to be happy, or whatever. You know what I'm saying? It's just we get all these little messages, and we incorporate it into who we are, and then buy into it, and then here we are as adults trying to function in the world, and all that stuff comes to the forefront.
And you must see it with patients, because I know that I see this so much in the corporate work that I do, where you know, somebody will, they'll have a reaction, say, to the boss. The boss makes them very, very anxious.
Mm-hmm.
And those people that are a little bit more self-aware, every now and then they'll say something like, he just reminds me of my dad.
Uh-oh.
You know, my father used to walk that when he was mad, right?
Oh, yes.
Or, You know, or you know, only my mother talked to me like that. It's like my mother talking. And, you know, you just wonder, even as people are saying it,
yes.
do you realize, like, how that
yes.
figure from the past
right.
is actually coming in, and instead of you being able to be objective, it's hijacking your presence
yes.
a little bit. So that's the type, it's really, in a lot of ways, again, if we can somewhat detach from some of it and say, not to beat up on ourselves,
right.
not to get down on ourselves, but to learn.
Yes.
It's all kind of fascinating, really, when we start to look at different pieces of it.
Boy, is it ever. By the way, in case you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle and my special guest. She's done everything, corporate consultant, trainer, executive coach, hypnotherapist, therapist, college professor, motivational speaker, just to name a few, authored, what, 8 books now, Bev? 8? You got 8 books going?
I believe this is the 8th,
oh,
yes.
Oh, my goodness.
You're keeping good track, yes, it's the 8th.
Well, I try to have you on whenever your books come out because they're great. But anyway, we're talking about Bev's latest book. It's called Self-Talk for a Calmer You, and we need it. We all need it. Come on, guys. it's helping you think about, you know, anxiety, the sources of our anxiety, not only what's going on in our world around us, but what happened to us in the past, and sort of identifying that. And then the biggie is working through the negative self-talk, which we're going to actually talk about. We were just talking, Beverly, about you know, our early upbringing or the messages we received, right? That may have been negative or,
yeah.
you know, projections. I don't mean to get, you know, into therapy talk, but onto us from our parents or caregivers about who we were that we bought into. Negative identifications, and then we project that out into the world of, oh boy, what if? Oh, that's scary. But what you just said was, you know, that the events in our lives are just objective situations. And it's the interpretation or our lens, right, through which those events are filtered or interpreted that's causing us distress because we have that all internalized and all ready to go to the negative place. But it could be just, I like that example you gave. It could be just like that situation with, what was her name in your book? Alice. Can you share with listeners the story about Alice who got the note from her boss? I thought that was good.
Yes. Oh, gosh. And this is, you know, if we start paying attention, I mean, life just is filled with so many of these lessons to show us this is really what's happening here. So Alice is quite a true situation, but it happens over and over and over again where you have somebody who, you know, gets up in the morning and they go and take a shower, the traffic's not too bad, you know, gets into work and, you know, feeling pretty good. Maybe she even had time to stop for her cup of coffee. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
Gets to her cubicle, starting to take off her coat, and there's a note on the desk from
Uh-oh.
The boss.
Yep.
And the note says, "Can you see me in my office?"
Yeah.
Well, you can even tell how I changed my tone, right? Because all of a sudden, Alice, who was feeling pretty good, is now thinking, oh my gosh,
yeah.
what now?
Mm-hmm.
And starts, I'm in trouble. It's probably that report I left on the desk last night. I'm sure it wasn't done to perfection. Why do I have to work for somebody who's such a perfectionist? Mm-hmm. And on and on and on. And the fascinating thing is all we have is a note.
Yep.
But by the time Alice is done, and even before she walks to the boss's office, she has a complete story written. She knows what's happening. She's probably already called a couple friends
right.
to say, I think my job's in jeopardy.
Right, right.
And all that's there is this white piece of paper
yes.
and a little bit of pen
yes.
that says, now, we know, Dr. Michelle, right? I mean, the boss could be a difficult person, and maybe she is going to get chewed out. That could be completely legitimate, but at that moment, she really knows nothing other
right.
than there's a no here. And
yes.
how many times throughout the day do we do this to ourselves?
Oh, my gosh. And that's also not a problem. Not a problem necessarily, but I mean, it's the interpreter. Exactly, we do. Whether it's on a piece of paper, via text, email, it's our own interpretation of a benign statement, you know, or something. Because as you...
And you add on, right, and then her friend walks in, though, and her friend, who's maybe a more... It's kind of like, what, are you crazy?
Right.
I think she's the best boss I ever had. He's the greatest guy. So you have these two people, creating all these scenarios, and all they have is the note. I mean, if it wasn't so painful for us, it would be comical.
Yeah. I mean, and that's where we go. It's just, you know, based on our own internal thinking and habits of the negative self-talk, we're going to generally interpret it negative if we have enough fears going on. But someone who has a little more positive spin on things may interpret it completely different. So that's where we have to learn to change it up, right?
And, you know, I think because sometimes people will say to me, you know, I may ask them, reframe a situation. So here's the note. Well, what's something else that note could represent? Hmm. And so many times, Dr. Michelle, I'll get the response. Somebody will say to me, oh, so you want me to pretend everything is fine, or you want me to put on rose-colored glasses, right?
Yeah.
You want me to tell myself it's all okay. And this is the curious thing to me. It's a little head-scratching to me because... we do in that moment have a choice, right?
Right.
So to me, it's just making a different choice. I mean, again, if you go to the boss's office, the boss screams at you, and you just, you know, it takes every ounce of energy not to reduce yourself to tears, and you're really feeling, okay, then that's a different situation we have to deal with.
Right.
But the issue really is, when I don't have enough data, why is it that we're so prone to create this negative scenario for ourselves instead of giving ourselves the opportunity to be more powerful and at least in that moment create a more positive scenario?
God, is that right, Bev? That is really, really helpful for folks to think about. And, you know, now we're going to get into the meat of it here. What I really appreciate is that, you know, you have suggestions. You have exercises to help the folks actually think and write down and work through their anxiety. So can you briefly describe how you help readers assess that sort of negative self-talk where Alice worked herself into, oh, my God, this is going to be horrible, you know, with some of your helpful exercises? You know, I guess you have them rate their anxiety and well, I'll let you talk about it.
Exactly, though. So what we really wanted to do was try to capture, you know, most all of the scenarios in life. While, you know, there's lots of things that happen to us, you know, there's basic situations. There's work, there's school, there's family, there's relationships. So in order for people to start to work with some of this, it is helpful to get a sense of what are those areas for me that really trigger me. Mm-hmm. And so what we've done is we've actually created a list of all kinds of different scenarios for somebody to be able to say, you know, is this anxiety inducing for me or is it not?
Right.
Now, for some of us, it's going to be that there's certain things that just really flip our buttons, and that's my area of focus. For other people, back to that generalized anxiety, and I've had some people say to me, I went through this list and, you know, a lot of stuff on here causes me anxiety. Is there something wrong with me? Yeah. And so that I said, well, then, you know, work with one piece at a time so that you really can catch yourself, start catching yourself, knowing, okay, every time I go into work, I'm telling myself that I'm not going to be successful. I'll never measure up. Work with that. Mm-hmm. And once you feel like you've got a new habit developed with that, then move on to another. Because really, that's what we're really talking about here, right? I mean, it's habits. What I think a lot of us don't realize is we've just done a really good job of honing, you know, these habits that don't necessarily benefit us.
Yes.
So we've got to practice. Keep practicing with new behaviors.
We really do. And get out of those habits. And it does, like, you nailed it, Bev. It takes, you know, just like learning anything, it takes repetition and rehearsal. We have to keep practicing and keep practicing, and also understand the reality that maybe it's not going to be a bad turnout. That's the reality. You know, the boss may say, you know, you're doing a good job. Keep it up. And that's all the meeting's about. You know, just wanted to acknowledge your progress or whatever.
Or think, you know, here's the part about it, too. I mean, this could be a whole discussion unto itself.
But, yeah.
You know, when you really think about different developments in life and different things we've been through, you know, there's many, many times, I would say, in my own life, I like to make the joke that the most terrible, awful things that have ever happened to me that I wouldn't wish on anybody ended up being the catalyst for so many of the things that are blessings for me now.
Oh, good for you.
Right? And
yes.
So even that, like, why are we... So, stuff happens.
Yes,
I mean, negative things happen. But how we take it
and
the messages we give ourselves about it and what we decide we're going to do with it, that's really what we're talking about here. We're not trying to say to your listeners, oh, life is going to be only a bowl of cherries, and if you just paint this, you know, positive brush on it and you say, oh, I love my boss is great, that the boss is going to be great. There's lots of terrible bosses out there, and you may have one.
Yeah.
It's not pretending that life is wonderful. It's saying, I need some power to be able to deal with these situations, and by me defeating myself all the time, I don't even have the choice here.
Yes.
To do anything with it. That's really the bottom line.
Is that true? And then folks get to choose. I mean, many people are kind of stuck if they have a really terrible work environment or, like you said, a bad boss or whatever. You know, they're sort of, they feel stuck and they have to sort of decide where they're going to go from there, or what they want to do possibly to uplift themselves into a better situation. But, you know, I so agree. I mean, stuff happens, and it's the way we roll through it. The way we, of course it hurts. Yes, we cry. Yes, we are in pain. Yes, we get depressed. We all feel. We all have it. But, you know, sometimes, like you said, Bev, I agree that it's a great opportunity to spin it, to say, okay, this is what I don't want. This is not good. This is a tough time. What do I want? What would feel better? And these are all lessons in life. We can kind of chalk it up to, this is a lesson, and I need to really work through myself and keep the strength and empower me and get the love from folks who are with me and move on, you know? And
well,
that's what it's about, too.
Because you must see this so much. And I think we get in these patterns even with people, with relationship, and, you know, and the boss could be, let's say they're not very good, right? And but my approach to them all the time is, I hate this guy, right?
Right?
So every time I go in, and that's where sometimes, you know, what if I said, hey, this is a guy in pain, you know, it's really my job to figure out how to manage up, you know, let me try to be more open. I mean, again, aren't you going to approach him differently? And by you doing that, you may, in fact, generate a different response. I mean, it certainly is worth a try.
Boy, is it ever. You know, it's true. It's true. I think, you know, with a lot of people who are in distress or make drama for us, as we say, we do. You're right on, Bev. We have to look at what are they going through? And, you know, there has to be sometimes, even though they may be mean to us and, you know, hurt us, there sometimes has to be a little empathy in saying, well, I guess they're having a rough day, plain and simple. I guess they're having a rough life. Maybe their things are not working out for them, or, you know, we do. We have to try to say, and then the second thing is, do I want to be with this person who keeps, you know, embroiling themselves in negativity and drama? So,
well, but that's it, you know, because now if I'm using my self-talk to say, well, I don't deserve better, and all bosses everywhere are terrible, and it seems like, you know, it's going to be my lot in life to just, you know, again, I'm not left with, you know, to me, and you know that my whole philosophy, it's about having choice, you know, having more objective choice. And not just being, you know, led around by your thoughts where you just feel so compromised. Mm-hmm. If you choose to stay with that boss and work on it, great. And you also have the choice to say, I don't want to be in this environment. And that's good, too.
Yes, it is so good. I think it's great. You talk about building our self-talk toolbox, and that's the big thing, is that self-talk. You know, negative self-talk keeps coming up. Just habits, you know. And we have to stop negativity in its tracks. I'm quoting you. What are some of the best suggestions you can give to listeners about how they can switch from those habitual negative self-talk messages to more positive self-talk messages?
Well, so one of the first things that we want to make sure we acknowledge here is you're going to catch yourself doing this. And, you know, what we're not saying, we don't want people to say, oh, my gosh, I've never noticed it. And look at, I do. I talk to myself so negatively. And
yes.
The idea here is, you know, you don't want, we all do this. This is learned behavior, and we all do it. The question is, you know, how can you figure out for you where you're doing it and how it's hurting you? So one way that I love, and this my mentor in hypnosis, Dr. Richard Hart, who's one of the folks that I dedicated the book to, taught us this years ago, and I'll tell you, I use it all the time. I teach it to everyone. It's my favorite technique, but we call it the stop technique. Because I'll have people tell me, well, I get in this rut, you know, and I don't realize, and I'm spiraling down. And so the stop technique says, let's say for me, I'll tell you, my negative self-talk kicks in. It's absolutely, I can identify it when I'm driving. I really do struggle with people who cut me off, people who drive through all of this kind of stuff, the rude behavior we have here in New England. So I know, right, that is a trigger for me.
Right.
And so the stop technique says that, you know, I'm driving as I was this morning on my way to a meeting, and I'm going by a side street, and a guy just comes flying out, you know, just about an inch away from clipping my car and gets in front of me.
Yeah.
Okay. So right then, my negative self-talk, you know, are you kidding me? You know,
exactly.
It's 7 o'clock in the morning. The stop technique is stop. So you put a big red stop sign up in your head, or for me, because I was alone in my car, I say it out loud, stop.
Yeah, there you go.
Stop.
There you go.
And you're literally just telling your mind, halt these thoughts.
Yes.
Halt. Just stop. But then what's important about it is that you have to then have something that you're going to do after the self-talk.
Yes. Yes. So folks can say, stop immediately, and then possibly focus on something else that, what would
is
you
more
suggest?
Positive.
Yes. So something,
so
yes. Sorry, Beth.
Exactly.
Go ahead. I'm
so
sorry.
For me, I have a little song. So I like to sing Men Without Hats from the 80s, the safety dance.
I love you. That's so cool.
Love that song. So I start singing the safety dance to myself. So I know I'm driving along, and you know what? The truth of the matter is that guy's long gone.
Yeah.
I'm singing my song, and now I'm actually feeling pretty good. So, you know, for some people, maybe it's a poem. Somebody might have a Bible verse or something from the Torah or something that just is comforting to them.
Right.
So you have something that you are ready to put in place so that once you stop, you can turn to something that's more positive.
Yes.
And, you know, and so listeners might be saying, but, you know, the guy did cut you off, and it is rude, and that could all be true, but what benefit would it have been to me to keep on getting more and more and more agitated? So by the time I get to the breakfast I'm going to, I'm got an upset stomach over some guy that I'll never see again.
That's right. And letting it go, letting stuff go in general is so important, you know, and that stop sign is the immediate let it go, move on, defocus, find something. I mean, I think about like funny situations that make me laugh, either goofy things that happened at family gatherings or something funny in a movie, or, you know, I immediately shift like you do. I do have the stop sign. I use that tool. Thank you very much, Beverly, for that. And I do, you know, shift to a funny thing that just takes my mind off and lightens things up. It's all about lightening things up a little bit so we're less stressed. So we're calm.
And you can, and if you're a visual person, I think sometimes, like I have some of my corporate clients who, you know, they get very, very stressed in meetings. You know, they may not like the conversation that's going on. So I'll say, you know, for some people it's their kids, for some people it might be a pet, it might be a place that they love to go.
Yes.
You know, bring a picture with you and just, you know, no one else has to know you. Maybe you put it in your lap, you look down. So just directing your attention to something that is more calming, more comforting, it brings you upbeat, you know, can make you laugh, or can just bring that tension down.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you keyed on it, Dr. Michelle, which is the, you got to be ready for it, though, right? Like, you know what those scenarios are. It's like, oh, that one was really funny. Let me kind of add that to my repertoire.
Yes.
So I can call upon that next time. And that's why I call it, like, a toolbox, you know,
yes.
to developing these skills and being ready so that here's my opportunity. Okay, I'm going to use that now.
Yes. What a great idea. I mean, and there are a lot of tools, folks. By the way, we're going to give you information on how you can get a hold of Beverly's new book. Which, you know, it's a great read. It's self-talk for a calmer you and help you get into the groove so you're thinking less negatively, so your life is going smoother, so you're not experiencing the anxiety that so many of us feel. Whether it's gone into a full-blown anxiety disorder or just everyday stress, which really, as you said earlier, Bev, can develop into that. This is going to help you calm down and sort of use the tools to make you think about being conscious of managing that stress. So, and you know, one of the most common issues I also deal with in my practice, not deal with, that's kind of negative, but that comes up in my practice, Beth, is relationships. I mean, we all have, I mean, that's, you. I'm going to quote you once again. You say, relationships are in many ways both the key to our happiness and success and the bane of our existence. So true. How can we change our self-talk to have better relationship with other people?
Yeah, you know, you think about this one too. It's funny because you were using that example earlier, and I was thinking, you know, where you might say about someone, well, maybe they're having a bad day.
Yeah.
And it's so funny how, you know, if I'm having a bad day, I might feel perfectly legitimate in taking it out on somebody else. And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, you know, I'm having a bad day, so people have to deal with it. But if that other person's having a bad day, I don't cut them the same slack. You know, it's really kind
yeah,
of a,
yeah, yeah.
It's a fascinating dynamic. And so some of what, you know, I ask people to think about here is really that idea that, you know, most people are doing things for some kind of positive reason, even though it may come out negatively. You know,
yes.
I like to share this story. My daughter, who's now 17, but when she was younger, she was just a really advanced kid, very bright, but she would have these temper tantrums. And I'll never forget one time, you know, she came in. I was in my room, and she came in, and she had had a temper tantrum, but she was calmer, and she came in and she said to me, you know, Mom, the whole reason I have those temper tantrums is that I need attention.
Yeah. Wow.
Right? Right?
Wow. What a smart person.
Yeah. And that's the only way for me to get your attention.
Yes.
And I just remember looking at her, and she was this little bit of nothing, but it was just the most stunning. I thought, oh my gosh, you know, to have like, you know,
wow.
I think she was all of like four or something, but she actually could connect. Now these temper tantrums were very difficult, and you know, were driving us absolutely crazy. But in that moment, I got to see, oh my gosh. This she's in need, but this is a child asking for help.
Yes.
And so that vignette, I try to ask people to carry that over. I mean, most of us just haven't learned, and many of us don't have the benefit of being able to work with the Dr. Michelle. I mean, we just don't know how to say, this is what I need, right?
Yeah,
this is how I'm hurting right now.
Yeah.
And so we do it poorly.
Exactly. We sure do. You're so right. You know, Beth, we got a quick email question from Jen about positive and negative thinking. Should we give it a shot? Try to help her out a little bit? I pull this up, and it's apropos to exactly what you're talking about right now and relationships. It's from Jen, and she says, My fiance and I are in therapy mainly because we're opposites. I'm more positive, and he makes fun of me and says I'm in denial. He calls himself a, quote, realist. I think he's mostly negative. How can I get him to be more positive? It's bringing me down. Wow. Okay, Jen. Well, thanks for that question.
Yes.
So here we go, Beth. It's all yours.
So this is one, though. There's a couple of pieces to this. You know, one is the behavioral aspect.
Yeah.
So we have different behavioral styles, and there is one scale around optimism, and there are some people who naturally have more of a, what we would call, glasses half full approach. They're more trusting, they're more upbeat, they're more easily motivated, and then you have people at the other end of the spectrum who are much more skeptical.
Yeah.
They want proof. They want, they want to know that something is factual before they're going to believe it. And those people see the upbeat people as kind of fake and phony and too happy.
Yeah.
And the upbeat people see the others as just downers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So some of it really is to start to look at this as objective behaviors as opposed to one is right, one is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And say, you know, his filter, he tends to filter things through a negative lens. So what does he need in order to be able to get comfortable? Is it more data? Is it more? And Jen, you may need sometimes to tone down your enthusiasm, you know, your upbeat, excited, because he might dismiss things the way he's filtering it and he's interpreting it. And for you, you know, it's not so much that you want to look at where it's bringing you down, because it's not really about you. It's about his behavior. And so your self-talk is probably saying, you know, well, what? He thinks I'm a phony. He thinks I'm this. Instead, just your self-talk needs to be, you know what? He needs more data. You know what?
Yes.
He needs to understand more about this. You know what? I need to share a little bit more about my thinking here.
Mm.
And just try to get more objective about it instead of reacting to it. Because that's what we do. It's like, what's wrong? You know what? You think I'm wrong?
Exactly.
That's where we get into trouble.
Great answer. And Jen, thank you so much for emailing us. We really appreciate it. And hopefully, I know that helped you out. Great, great, great helpful answer, Beth. And by the way, Jen, you and all my listeners, if you'd like to get a hold of Beth's new book, you can do so. Tell them the best way to find you and more information about you and get your new book, Beth.
Well, there's still some early release since the book isn't actually out in all the stores yet. It's online. So if you go to selftalkforacalmeryou.com, if you buy the book through there, you can get actually my free ebook, which is 6 Keys to Confident Communicating.
Mm-hmm.
So it's selftalkforacalmeryou.com. And then my regular site, thehumanbehaviorcoach.com, of course, has all kinds of information too.
Oh, that's terrific. And that will be up, by the way, tomorrow in the archives. If you missed any bit of this show, you want to re-listen, you want to replay or download or whatever, and those, that show will be available for everybody as well as the connection and all the updated information on Bev and her latest book. And, of course, you can get Bev's other books. I mean, there's so many going on here. I mean, we talked like this is your eighth book, right?
It is, and I was thinking, you know, to Jen's question, of course, my very popular one, Understanding Other People, does talk a lot about some of those issues, just the differences in our styles and whatnot.
That's great. It's called 30 Days to Understanding Other People. It's a great book. Also, the Make Your Shift, the 5 Most Powerful Moves You Can Make to Get Where You Want to Go, and just go online at the website there, and we'll have it up for you again for Beverly Flaxen. And hey, you're good to go, everyone. Beth, thank you so much for being on the show. As always, it's such a pleasure to have you.
Oh my gosh, I'm always so honored to get to participate with you. You've got great insights too, so it's really a lot of fun for me. I hope we helped a lot of your listeners today.
I know you did, and I'm always grateful to have you here. So looking forward to your next book. And
I was going to say I'll be back when I figure out what the next topic is.
Or I'll just call in between and talk more about, really keeping calmer and how people can manage their stress. That's always one of the most popular subjects. So, All right.
It's an important one.
Yeah,
well, thank you, Dr. Michelle.
Oh, you bet. Take good care, and thanks so much again, Beth. Bye-bye. Okay, once again, Beverly Flaxington, and yeah, she's got 8 books out there that are just amazing, and it will help you improve your life. Tell me about it. I've read all of her books, and they're terrific. By the way, if you have any questions or comments, you can email me here at DocMichelle, DocMichelle at AOL.com, directly related here to LA Talk Radio, the country's most listened to internet talk station. I'm your really friendly psychologist who always says to you, listen, you got to take care of yourself first. It's all about what's within you. You see, you got to discover the source in you, and then you'll be great for other people. That's the way it works in the world. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. More wonderful, positive information next Friday at 11 a.m. here on the couch with Dr. Michelle. Have a good one. Bye-bye.